Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock. Right now, on this day, back in 1890, Cecil Rhodes and the colonists that he would be responsible for at the time would found an area called Fort Salisbury, which is the modern-day version, or what we know today as Harare. I wonder how you found an area that existed before you got there. In 1919, Adolf Hitler would join the German Workers' Party. Interestingly enough, he had no interest in workers' rights. He joined for other reasons, one of them being anti-Semitism, obviously. In 1977, Steve Biko would pass away in custody today, dying from his injuries. In 1981, on this day, the Smurfs would be broadcast for the first time in America. In 1989, on this day, the Secretary General of SWAPO, that was a former union in South Africa, would be assassinated on this day. That is the South African People's Organization. The Secretary General in question was one advocate Anton Lebowski. In 2005, on this day, Disneyland Hong Kong would open up. And in 2011, on this day, Beyonce would give us Love on Top, the song that would go on to win her a Grammy in 2013. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we reflect on some company performances. We speak to the CEO of First Rand, Mary Vilagazi, about First Rand's full year performance. We have a chat with the CEO of Lesaka Technologies around their full year performance, and we reflect on Sibanye's half year performance with their Senior Vice President of Investor Relations, James Wellstead. We spoke to James a little while ago about some developments from their European business. Now we're going to reflect on the numbers for the first half of the year. Very interesting numbers indeed, including a large impairment for their US business. Then we've got a conversation as part of our SME Thursdays with a company called Cleopatra Tissue Products. We're going to get a sense of how they built the company, what it is they do, and where it is they supply their products.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Before getting into all of those developments, we're going to reflect on how the markets have been performing throughout the day. They've certainly been a lot better than what they were yesterday. I'm joined on the line by founder and director at Herenia Capital Advisors, Pietri Redlinges, to reflect on the numbers and try and make sense of the performance today. Good evening, Marmalade. Lovely to speak to you, as always. Today, markets had a recovery. Yesterday was a torrid day. Today was like nothing happened.
Well, nothing moves in straight lines, as the saying goes. So yeah, a bit of a bounce coming through today. Top 40 up like 1%. A bit of a recovery coming through in the commodity space as well. Gold up 1.5%. I think, you know, some time ago, we had upside targets for gold at 2,500. And we'd said that this is the top of the range. And once it hits the top of the range, it should then start trading down towards the bottom of the range again. Which is around 1900 at this point. And today it's breaking through the top of the large channel that it's been trading on. So if it can actually keep staying bid here, then who knows how high it goes. But it is the highest it has ever been ever in history. So, yeah, commodities counters doing relatively well today on the back of that. Also, interestingly enough, we see palladium had quite a strong move. And that is on the back of some news. We'll get to that in a second. But essentially, palladium over the last couple of days has really rallied very hard. And that, I think, has got a lot to do with the Sibanye results that were released today. So we'll get to that in a second, if you like. But otherwise, I mean, a relatively good day, right? The S&P 500 also mostly flattish, but last night had quite a strong move, which obviously that strong bounce that we saw coming through yesterday was on the back of some inflation data, and that, you know, takes a while to spread across the world. So Asia had a good session, we then had a good session, so we're kind of a day behind. The US currently flat, I think, waiting for a new catalyst, so we'll see whether or not this bounce lasts. I think over the last couple of days, you know, with the LeaderX convention, for example, that's been taking place, a lot of opinions were expressed by people smarter than myself. And, you know, I think there's a general feeling that From an economic data standpoint, the recession is coming, right? At least the US recession, let's put it that way. How that's going to affect us is open for debate. But before that happens, it doesn't mean that the market is going to start crashing like tomorrow, right? Generally, at least my personal feeling is that we probably see the election result come out. The market responds very bullishly to that. And we have a blow off top type movement before, you know, the house of cards comes down. But we know from a historic perspective that once the interest rates start being cut, which at some point they will be, that's generally the signal for the beginning of the, you know, the recession, particularly in the US. So we'll see how this turns out. In the meantime, I think we're in a sort of high volatility space, right? If you look at the VIX even, which is a volatility index, it's trading quite high. And that just shows that the market is kind of nervous, and that there's a higher than usual amount of volatility in the market. So if we see it down a percent or two the one day, up followed by 2 or 3% up the next day, this is kind of the territory we're in now, where you know, it's not that sort of slow grind, easy money situation that we've seen over the last 2 years.
Pietri, I want to look at some local developments. Obviously, the palladium price that you mentioned spurring on a lot of the PGM counters, the platinum price also kind of coming to the party, not really by much. But if we look at the biggest gainers on the JSE today, and we look at the resources sector gaining more than 4%, and the bulk of that was platinum counters.
Yeah, so, I mean, dare I say it, the bottom is in.
No, don't say it.
Okay, well, the bottom is almost here. How's that? Is that better? I mean, I don't know if you'll ever be able to pick the exact turning point, right? So don't quote me on that. But I think we're near the bottom of palladium, I mean, of PGM prices, the platinum group metals in particular, so platinum, palladium, rhodium. And I think we can see this by a couple of things. For example, Sibanye, you know, put out results today. Not as good. Some production numbers are down. Revenue numbers are down. I mean, they did okay. The cash portion of their balance sheet is up by like 25 billion rand or something. So it's good and bad. But the bad is essentially that, you know, due to lower than usual prices, revenue is under pressure, right? And this has led them to say, well, look, we're going to cut 200,000 ounces of palladium production, you know, going forward. That feels like the bottom to me, right? Once supply starts being removed from the market, price has to adjust, because they're essentially saying that it costs them $300 to $400 per ounce more to produce than what they can sell it for, so they have to produce less of it, so there's less supply. Hopefully that adjusts price. So I think from here, palladium or PGM prices are going up. Also, something that I think you and I spoke about on the sidelines at Leaderx was around, you know, and we actually spoke about it the other day, also last week, where, you know, EVs, electronic vehicles, are very cool and all, but they're not really taking off as well as people would have liked to. And there's also this realization that, well, there's just simply not enough energy production on Earth to immediately replace every petrol engine or ICE internal combustion engine car with an electronic vehicle, with an EV. It's just not possible. And manufacturers that have made these commitments that we're only going to be producing EVs by 2030 have rolled back those commitments and said, well, maybe we were a bit too ambitious. We're going to, you know, keep making these petrol engine cars for a while still. That, I think, sort of spurs demand for platinum or PGMs as well, because we know that's a, you know, important catalytic converter input for a lot of these ICE engines, right? So you have to try to at least clean up the emissions in some way, and the platinum inside the catalytic converter inside the exhaust systems is what is primarily you know, the use for it in these days. So I think that shift back to, I want to say, back to reality, is going to spur a bit of demand for the PGMs.
Mm.
And therefore, I think it's, you know, it's a good time to buy platinum stocks.
Very interesting take on that PGM space. Pietri, I want to look at some of the other data points that came out today. We saw ECB rate decisions coming through. Any surprises there?
No, I mean, they didn't change anything. I think that, you know, everybody's kind of watching the US. They're going to be the first movers. So no real surprise. I think our expectation is that we will probably, well, our expectation is that we'll see a cut this year, but we've still got 3 months to go, right? So I think we probably start seeing a US interest rate cut sort of within the next 3 months. You know, may or may not be right. I do think that that's going to be the case. That's our sort of base expectation. And I think only once the US starts cutting do we see, you know, the rest of the world coming through. I think what happens is the US election takes place, then the interest rate cut happens. All of these things the market is going to respond massively positive to. And only sort of second quarter next year does the reality sink in that, wait a minute, we're cutting interest rates because things are not that good. So that's sort of our base scenario for how we're playing the market at the moment.
Pietri, sticking with the US for a second before I let you go, yesterday we got CPI data out of the US, came in bang in line with expectations. Markets initially were a bit wary of those numbers, but then subsequently, as you said, reacted positively. Today we got PPI data out of the US. What does that suggest?
So, I mean, obviously also just a measure of inflation, just at a different end of the equation. So this is producer price index. So this is the, you know, measuring the price changes or increasing prices for manufacturers, input costs, right? So essentially the month-on-month number for August was 0.3% versus an expected 0.2%. The year-on-year number for August was 2.4% versus an expected 2.5%. So a little over monthly, a little under annually, kind of wishy-washy, not really sort of, I would call that in line with expectations. So no real fireworks coming from that. And you can see the sort of muted reaction from the US market today. It's up 10 basis points. You know, yesterday was the big number. There's no real surprise in today's number. We just kind of keep grinding on, holding our breath, waiting for something else to happen at this stage. But we do have a bit later today, which I think might be... you know, interesting is reserve balances with the Federal Reserve Bank. I don't know if that's really a big market mover. There's also a 30-year bond auction, which might be quite interesting. But other than that, it's kind of, you know, the big news for the week, I think, is out of the way.
Big news out of the way, and the Rand is reacting positively to that. I saw we spiked up to 18 Rand today, but we're back at 17.85, and we will leave on that positive note the conversation that we're having now with Pietri. Thank you so much, Pietri, as always, for the time and for the insights. That's Pietri Redlingace, founder at Herenia Capital Advisors, joining me to reflect on the market movements and share some sentiments around what could be driving markets.
My name is Farzan Hassani. I'm the co-founder and CEO of the crypto exchange Valor. This week I'm on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, and exploring a somewhat philosophical subject: is Bitcoin an instrument of freedom? And if so, what will that freedom look like? It's an important subject for all of us. We've got problems with our current financial system and society at large. Join us.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The first of the companies that gave us results that we'll be reflecting on today was the First Rand business. They gave us their full year results for the financial year ended June 2024. I have the privilege of speaking to First Rand's new CEO, Mary Vilagazi, about the numbers and trying to make sense of the performance. Good evening, Mary. Lovely to speak to you again. Your first reflections as a CEO.
I think for the past year, the business has delivered incredible results given the difficult macroeconomic environment we've had to navigate, and given the challenges that our UK subsidiary faces there with a review that's happening in the finance sector. We've had to set aside a very big provision. So if I look at the earnings that we've delivered being up 4%, I think in an environment where we've seen such a steep increase in retail credit impairments and all these other headwinds that I've explained, you know, we feel pretty good about the outcome that we've been able to deliver at that 4% earnings, particularly because our return on equity, it's at 20.3% within our stated range of 18 to 22%, and pleasingly we're able to increase the dividend to our shareholders by 8%. And if I strip out the impact of the provision and really look at operational performance, our franchises really did well to deliver earnings growth of 10% up for the year.
Mary, when we look at those numbers in greater detail, and I'm just looking at some of the headline figures and actually any real metric that you use to measure the performance of the business, the theme that comes through is a lot about consistency and discipline. What's the secret cocktail in a climate where a consumer's constrained and you've got such a wide operation globally as well? How do you balance the discipline to achieve this level of consistency?
Yeah, so I think we have, you know, well-established frameworks. We often talk about it. It's basically the frameworks that guide how we utilize financial resources. We call them FRM. So those disciplines are really well embedded in the businesses, you know. So I suppose you need the people who are going to make sure they use the frameworks and are sufficiently discerning and make the right decisions, you know. So I think it's not just the frameworks and the tools that make it happen. I guess it's also the experience we have in the business. And I guess the consistency part, I mean, I think a lot of the decisions you make in banking, you know, I think you have to see them through different cycles, you know. So I think this consistency comes from us making calls that sometimes are quite different to what our peers are making. And I guess when we've got the conviction, we see them through. You know, we have an approach that we've taken around how we manage our endowment that in this particular financial year comes at an opportunity cost of about 1.5 billion. But, you know, it's actually a strategy that's delivered well for our shareholders when rates were low. You know, so we don't look at it and say, okay, we abandon it just because we don't like the outcome now. So our ability to stick through with our calls. And another strategic call that I can point out is really our decision in 2021, post-COVID, when we started lending again outside of our customer base, we made a decision to not to pull back from high-risk customers and focus on low to medium-risk customers. Because remember, high-risk customers, if I come in and I have a high-risk profile, the bank can still loan you money, they just price you up. But we decided to forego that margin from high-risk customers. And that strategy to stick with low to medium-risk customers who have the capacity to lend, I think has held us in good stead. As much as the impairments are up significantly in this period, I think had we not had that strategy, you know, the experience would be a lot more adverse. Mm. And what that has allowed us to do is continue lending. So we haven't been in and out of the market. We've consistently just stuck to our appetite. What has happened over the last 2 years or 18 months or so, with rates being high and inflation high as well, is that we saw reduced affordability, you know, so customers did not have the level of affordability as much as they are low or medium risk customers. So we saw, you know, I think we saw a reduction in the loans, but not because we've necessarily cut on appetite, but just because of affordability pressures. And of course, where we see concerning trends emerge, as we are seeing with these debt review processes, you know, we do respond appropriately. But overall, I think we've stuck with supporting our clients during this challenging period. What we did not foresee is rates to be at this high level for such a long period of time. So, but I think given how the cycle is playing out, you know, we're still reasonably quite confident and comfortable with the credit decisions we have made.
Mary, you touched on the UK business at the start of our conversation, and obviously a 3.3 billion rand provision is no small amount. Take me through what's happening there with the business, why the provision's been raised. Is it a once-off provision? Are there other things you're kind of concerned about there? Just give me a bit more colour there, please.
Yeah, so the provision relates to, I guess, the uncertainty we are facing in the UK. So we are waiting clarity on where the UK FCA, and the FCA is basically the conduct regulator in the UK, they announced that they're going to be looking at the motor finance sector in January this year. And they appointed what they call a skilled person to review the practices of the sector. Now, in 2021, the FCA had reviewed the practices of the sector. And at the time, they said, okay, they going forward, you know, the use of discretionary commission practices should be taken away. So this is where the dealer has got the ability, you know, to flex the interest rate for the deal that they get into the customer. So basically at the time they said, this practice might result in consumer detriment. Okay, and then like Australia, they looked at it and said, okay, going forward, we no longer will permit this. In West Bank, in South Africa, we also followed suit, even though in South Africa, in the market, that practice still exists. Okay, so that's really the origin of this. And when the FCA came with ruling out and coming up with new regulations that were forward-looking, some consumers then sat back and said, okay, does this mean that I had a worse deal before these regulations? And so we've seen a lot of legal activity that has come about since then. We've also been taken a lot of these cases to court, and I think the court has found in our favor in more than 70% of the cases. So Jimmy, I think it's quite a complex matter. We have to just allow the FCA process, I think, to bring it to a conclusion. Their intervention was really helpful because I think, you know, there were legal cases all over the place, and that also is not sustainable. So we welcome this review. It is quite a sizable amount of money that we've set aside, I think, in rands and in pounds terms. And hopefully there'll be more clarity in the next year and that, you know, that we don't actually have to utilize it. We think it's a conservatively struck provision.
Very conservative approach towards managing a business. Mary, I want to look at the NII, the net interest income side of the business. That's a huge component of the business, and it was quite a bit in today's SENS announcement around how you think through that part of the business and the methodology in that. And you touched on this to say that interest rates haven't exactly gone according to plan the way you had initially mapped them out. How is that influencing your strategy when it comes to NII, understanding that we could potentially be in for interest rate cuts as early as next week?
Yes. So for this past financial year, NII was up 10%. And I mentioned earlier on that we have an ALM strategy that we know that through the cycle has created value for our shareholders. But in this particular year, it came at an opportunity cost because rates were higher than where we had, let me just loosely say it, where we had hedged. Okay, so when rates come down, obviously that strategy starts helping us on the part that we have hedged. So this year, I think we say NII is up 10%, but it would have been 13.5% higher. And as we look forward to a cycle where rates are coming down, as I said, we want to have the support from the part of the endowment that we've hedged, but you know, the part of the endowment where we haven't hedged, you know, that and NII is going to come down. But I think we also see that, you know, our book mix, our portfolio mix is tilting more towards corporate and commercial. And I mean, I guess those, when we do those infrastructure deals, they are generally lower margin business than a retail heavy strategy. So that's also just part of where some of our NII softening that we guided looking forward will come through. But, you know, I think we have seen healthy growth in deposit franchise, and we are still looking forward to a year. Even though retail is under pressure, I think there are still pockets where we are able to lend. So hopefully we get a bit more support than perhaps what seems to be an overly cautious outlook at the beginning of the year. But we are expecting to see rate cuts start to come through hopefully at the September and the November meetings of the SARB and I think another one early next year. So all of that should hopefully bring some relief to consumers and households. Although even with three cuts of 25 basis points or just 75 basis points, repo rates will be at 7.5. I think, Jim, it's quite important to remember that that is still much higher than the pre-pandemic levels. Eh? So I think it's not the consumer completely out of the woods, but I think more relief.
Speaking of relief, Mary, you and I caught up in October of last year as you were announced as the CEO. We spoke about a variety of things, including just kind of the culture taking over from Alan and your responsibilities and your ideas going forward. How are you feeling at this point? Are you feeling relieved that the transition has been sort of smooth and seamless? And are you settled in quite nicely?
Yes, I think earlier on, when I wrote to employees, I commended them for not having lost any momentum. And I think that my second half of the year performance was particularly good. And I said, you know, that is only ever an outcome of when everybody pulls together, I think, to make all the kind of leadership transitions the business has had to contend with. And I think, you know, the outcome really is that of a seamless handing over of the baton. So I said to the leadership team, they do deserve a podium performance for how well the transitions have been managed. So Jamie, feeling quite comfortable and really, I suppose, excited about the prospects of what South Africa in particular, I think, can offer in the years ahead.
A strong performance, but an even stronger team behind that performance. It's quite the lovely story to tell. I think we'll leave it at that for now, Mary. We wish you the best of luck into the new financial year, and we will certainly catch up as the year goes on. That was Mary Vilagazi, CEO at First Rand, reflecting on the group's numbers and the performance that was the 2024 year.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we move on to Sibanye Stillwater results. They gave us an update for the first 6 months of their new financial year. I'm joined on the line by the Executive Vice President for Investor Relations at Sibanye, James Wellstead, to reflect on the company's performance at this stage and what we make of it. Good evening, James. Lovely to speak to you again. It's clearly been a very eventful 6 months into this year, but also just an eventful 12 months in general from this time last year. Take me through your thoughts around what's been happening.
Listen, I think it's been a roller coaster since 2020, to be honest. I mean, COVID and then, you know, the aftermath of COVID, we had record PGM prices and commodities were flying. And then in 2022, there was a turnaround and a very sudden collapse in 2023, which is still, you know, we are still feeling the effects of and has extended largely due to the extended interest rate cycle that we, you know, the interest rate tightening cycle that's taking place in the US and then also weak economic growth in China. So commodity prices have remained under quite severe pressure this year, and PGMs in particular, which are, you know, make up most of our profit and cash flow contribution, have been under particular pressure. And as a result, our earnings cash flows have been severely impacted. So, you know, we've had to then adopt a more conservative or prudent approach to essentially enduring through this low point in the commodity cycle, which may extend for some time.
That PGM basket price has definitely not been kind to anyone in the market, especially not Sibanye. James, when we look at the business from where it stands, obviously you can't just cease to operate. You, as you said, you have to kind of put in place measures to weather the storm. And I see you've reinforced the balance sheet quite a bit. Take me through the strategy there and the thinking there to say, we know this won't last forever, but in the meantime, we still have bills to pay.
Yeah, we remain quite positive on the outlook for PGMs, you know, on a fundamental basis, and battery metals, which we are also investing in. And clearly gold at the moment is doing very well, and we are in producing gold in South Africa. So we think that we're well positioned if we can just push through and endure through this low price environment. You know, we'll be very, very well positioned for a recovery in prices when the economy turns, a global economy. So, but what we've done really, and we started last year, was quite proactively, I think, compared to a lot of our peers, was really restructuring the operations. So by that, I mean closing older, you know, loss-making end-of-life operations, and then restructuring higher cost operations in order to reduce costs and try and bring them close to profitability, or to ensure that they're profitable. We did that at our gold assets and our PGM assets earlier this year in South Africa. And we also restructured in the US, where we've got a PGM mine in Montana, and we were able to bring costs down from about $1,800 per ounce down to about $1,350. So we made substantial improvements already. We are starting to see the benefits of that. We're seeing improved cash flows, lower costs at our operations. But, you know, with prices this low, some of our operations are still making losses, one of those being the US PGM operations. And we announced today that we're going to go into a further restructuring phase to again address losses that we're experiencing, which will probably result in closure of one of the mines, and will reduce output from that mine by about 200,000 ounces of palladium and platinum a year. So this is quite a significant step. You know, the market's been calling for supply to be taken out, and this is quite a substantial amount of palladium. In addition to the operational restructuring we've done, we've also, as you said, reinforced our balance sheets, and that's been done again through proactive engagement with our lenders. We've increased the debt covenants on our balance sheet, so there's less risk of us breaching covenants if our earnings and EBITDA declines further. And then what we just said at the beginning of the year was we are going to pursue capital or raise capital, but non-debt and non-equity capital. And what we've been able to do is first secure a gold prepay, which effectively is gold that we'll deliver over the next 2 years, but we get payment up front. And it's got a range. It's in a floor of 1.35 million and a cap of 1.75 million rand per kilogram. So we retain upside to the gold price, but we get an injection of 1.8 billion minimum into our balance sheets. And we are currently engaging for approximately $600 to $700 million of other, you know, non-debt financing of the same nature, either streams or prepays. So we've taken quite a lot of steps to preserve cash flows from the operations, and then also to ensure that our balance sheet is very robust and we've got enough liquidity and flexibility to endure. And then, you know, when we come out of this, to continue to create value.
James, one of the things you couldn't get around was that 7.6 billion rand impairment to that US business. And as you mentioned, obviously, there are some strategic decisions that have had to be made around that. Is this the hopefully first of last, or the first and only impairment? Or are we anticipating that things could change if the basket price changes and things affecting the business?
So we impaired the US PGM operations at the end of last year, due, again, mainly to the PGM basket price declining to the extent that it has. So the fair value was no longer as high as we had calculated before. And then we've had to impair a further 7.5 billion at the end of June this year, again, because the outlook for the PGM prices is less positive, and we use consensus pricing from the market, which is about 5 to 8% lower than what we'd used at the end of 2023. The book value of the US PGM assets is about 15 billion rand, and obviously with this restructuring, depending on where the prices go and what happens in the market, there is a possibility we may have to impair again at the end of this year.
James, something you and I spoke about when we caught up on the Keliber project and what Sibanye had intended to do around that was around some of the bold decisions that the management team is taking. And you've run me through a couple of them now with the prepayment on the gold side of it. Despite all of the challenges and the difficulties you've had to weather as a business, you still came out, you elected to maintain your current dividend policy, even though there was no interim dividend that was paid out this time around. Shareholders can take comfort in the fact that you do still have them in high regard and you do still plan to keep rewarding them.
Yeah, we haven't paid a dividend because our normalized earnings, which is what our dividend policy is based on, were negative. But, you know, the dividend policy is still intact. And when our earnings recover, we will continue paying dividends. And we have been a leading dividend payer, you know, since we formed in 2013. So we'd like to maintain that position. But what we have done is, you know, we are confident, as I said, about the outlook for the metals we produce. We see this current period of low prices as temporary, and due to various factors that we don't think are going to continue for over the longer term. So we have continued to invest in the Keliber project, which is a lithium project in Finland, so that we will be able to deliver production of lithium hydroxide into the European battery industry from 2026, which is when we think we'll start to see deficits in lithium markets because of the ongoing growth in battery electric vehicles, and obviously supply being impacted by current low prices. So it is a bit of a bold step, if some might think, some of the analysts believe so, funding quite significant capital at this point in the market. But we have always taken a counter-cyclical approach to investing, and to our strategy's always been counter-cyclical, and we've created a lot of value for stakeholders through that approach, and we believe that we'll continue to do so going forward.
Sticking to their guns and preparing for a better second half of the year, we wish you the best of luck for that second half, James. We'll catch up at the end of the year, or if something happens sooner, we will definitely reach out and stay in touch. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights, James. It's James Wellsted, Executive Vice President for Investor Relations at Sibanye-Stillwater, joining me to reflect on their first half of the year's performance and where to from here.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs here. I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with the former chief executive of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and soldier, Roy Anderson. We'll be looking at leadership style and approach when it comes to solving problems, comparing the role of discipline in military and civilian leadership, and strategies for setting and achieving goals under pressure.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And wrapping up the conversations around the numbers that we got out today, we got a full year update from Lesaka Technologies. They gave us their update for the year ended 2024. I'm once again joined on the line by Lesaka's CEO, Lincoln Miley, to take a look at these numbers and try and make sense of the company's performance. Lincoln, good evening. Lovely to speak to you again. The last time you and I spoke, we were optimistic around what was happening. We spoke about the Adumo acquisition. We touched on the touch science business. This time around, revenues are up. The operating loss has narrowed quite significantly. Take me through the performance of the business. Take me through your reflections over the year that was.
Thank you, Jimmy. It's really been a pleasing set of results for us. It's been a tough time, but I think we have been able to deliver as we promised the market. We have revenue increasing at 11% to 10.6 billion rands. We've reversed our operating loss of 275 million rands to an operating income of 67 million rands. Group adjusted EBITDA has increased by 55% to 691 million rands. We've also worked a lot on our balance sheet. We've turned a net debt to group EBITDA from 4.5 times to 2.5 times. And lastly, I'm quite pleased that our fundamental earnings per share has improved to 1.06 per share compared to a fundamental loss per share of 2.66 last year. So very, very pleasing set of results, and give us quite a platform for growth. So the first chapter of the Lesaka turnaround is complete. We're now looking at the second chapter, and that's a chapter of growth.
Lincoln, let's reflect on the portfolio and the segments within the business. What were some of the standout areas within the business that actually helped boost this turnaround? It is quite a remarkable turnaround, and it does speak to the fact that you guys have been very hard at work to get the business back on track.
Yeah, consumer division increases revenues by 15% to 1.3 billion rands, and its segment adjusted EBITDA increased by 361%. 274 million. And so this was a business 3 years ago that was burning cash. It was a business that was loss-making, and it's the turnaround is now complete. On the merchant side, we've seen the revenue grow at 12% to 9.3 billion rand, and the segment adjusted EBITDA at 4%, but normalized at 15%. at 624 million rand. So we're quite happy that our engines, are firing. We look at some of the throughput numbers that are coming through. You look at VAS, value-added services on the micro-merchant space, that's looking good at 43% year-on-year growth. We're looking at card acceptance growing at 30%. When you're looking at the consumer business, we're looking at accounts, new accounts growth at 21%, lending at 32% year-on-year, and insurance growing at 31%. So all of these are just indications that the underlying businesses are strong. Where we've had headwinds has been in the area of lending in the small business, because obviously the economy has not been doing well, but we've maintained quality of the book in that space, and we think that with the market turning, we will see very good, nice growth on that side.
Lincoln, I want to look at that market turning. Obviously, with the nature of what it is that you do at Lesaka and the services that you provide, a consumer that is not constrained is the ideal consumer, and a consumer that is benefiting from interest rates coming down is going to be a consumer that's likely to be transacting more, which is always a good thing for your businesses. How are you seeing the landscape shaping up going into next week, obviously being the first time we could potentially see rate cuts in the longest time? And how is that shaping your strategy and your thinking from a business perspective?
So if I look at the consumer side, we have a very unique environment where our focus is social grant beneficiaries. And they are not sometimes as affected directly like all other customers. And we found that our book has remained very, very, very good in that space. We've had less than 6% loan loss ratio for the last 3 years. And long may it last. So that business has done well and will continue to do well. But we're obviously always watching if there's any spikes. Where we see a very good prospect for the future is in the lending in the SME environment, because the turn in interest rates will positively factor in our growth. We'll be able to take on more credit and take on a bit more risk and be able to extend more credit in that space. So we think that the economic environment in South Africa, with load sharing being a thing of the past, with a very positive macroeconomic environment that looks like it's unfolding, a bit of stability that we're looking at in the political environment, all of those things will augur well for our growth in the SME environment. And I think then the acquisitions that we've made also will add, to the growth prospects that we have. And that's why we've put out a very bullish, guidance for both EBITDA and revenue next year.
I was going to come to that, Lincoln. It's been, I actually don't know when was the last time I saw a company willingly put out guidance and say, looking forward, this is how we think or how we expect we're going to perform. I think coming out of the COVID period and all the challenges we've had to face, companies just stopped giving guidance. And it's nice to see that you're optimistic about your business, but you're also understanding of exactly where the business is going to fall. Take me through the guidance that you've given to the market around FY25.
Yeah. Firstly, I think when we started this journey about 2 years ago, we thought that given our past, we needed to give guidance, and we've been able to meet our guidance. And that's been very good for us to give a sense of credibility to the work that's being done. Now, with the new acquisitions that we've made and the growth in the underlying businesses, we've been able to put up an EBITDA guidance for 2025 in the range of 900 million rands to a billion rands. And then on the revenue side, we put up guidance and revenue of a growth between 10 billion rands and 11 billion rands. And we say, and you say all these things because we see the growth in the underlying businesses, but we also see the opportunities for inorganic growth. And the two acquisitions we've made, Tatside and Adumo, I think will add to that. We've not factored in any other acquisitions that we've got in the pipeline and any of the prospects that we're looking at the moment. Just on the acquisitions that we've made, we think that there's a very good story emerging for 2025.
Lincoln, let's peek behind that curtain. What are the other acquisitions that you allude to?
Well, all I can say is that we've had the same capital allocations committee since 2021, and they've been very strict to say that any acquisitions we make have to be EBITDA accretive. Secondly, they've got to give us scale. Thirdly, they've got to be able to give us a better solution set and add to our geography as well. So we think that there are a number of bolt-on acquisitions that we can add to the platform that we've created at Lesaka. We've become a natural consolidator in this space, and we will be the leading fintech in Southern Africa. It is also possible that there may be also transformative acquisitions in the same way as the Connect acquisition that we did 2 years ago, that we've been able to bed down and integrate, and it's now a huge contributor to our business. And a transaction like Adumo is also possible. So we just have to watch the space, Jimmy, as we start to look at the targets that we've got in our sights.
Never giving too much away there, Lincoln. Before I let you go, Lincoln, I want to reflect on the share price. Market came down more than 3% today. Ordinarily, on good sets of results, people might wonder why the market's coming down. But I think context is important. The market was up almost 6% yesterday. So clearly, the numbers are good and the market's digesting the information you're giving them. How do you reflect on where the share price is performing? Are you still feeling that the share price is undervalued? I remember you and I spoke about this a long time ago to say that the value is there, but the market's not recognizing it.
Yeah, I think, Jimmy, what we can control are the controllables. I think continue to focus on the business, continue to make sure that we deliver on our promises. We think that there are also some activities that we may move the market at the right time when we bought the Adumo business. Part of that sale was cash and part of that sale was equity. So there will be a very good number of shares coming into the market. So some of those things will move the market. So I think our view is not to just look at daily movements, and it's how do we look at this business going forward. We do think that there's a lot of inherent value in this stock, and that people are going to see as we unlock this value in this business.
The value is there and it will be unlocked. I like the optimism. I think we'll catch up when the value does start to be unlocked and we do start to get those announcements come through. I'm very excited to see what lies ahead for Lesaka. We'll leave it at that for now, Lincoln. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Lincoln Miley, CEO at Lesaka Technologies, on their full year and giving guidance into their new financial year.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's Thursday, it's SME of the Week time, and we're taking a look at a very interesting business called Cleopatra Tissue Products. I'm joined on the line by the company's director, Euraz Osman, to take a look at the business and try and understand what it is that they do. Good evening, Euraz. Thanks so much for taking the time. What is Cleopatra Tissue Products?
Cleopatra Tissue Products, a family business going for 25 years now. We specialize in the manufacture of baby diapers, and we have a comprehensive basket of other products as well. We've started manufacturing for about 15 years now, and this family business has grown in leaps and bounds.
You say family business that specializes in producing diapers. It's quite interesting. The business didn't actually start out in this space. How does a business go from being a refrigeration business, which I believe that's what it was in the past, to deciding that this is the new way that you guys want to take the family business?
Well, it's interesting, but under the guidance of my father, we had a great dealing with corporate retail through his refrigeration business. So we were always exposed to these products, and somehow we stumbled upon this on our travels, and demand for tissue paper is where we started. And as we grew along, we found that there was a demand for family consumer products like hygienic products, and we moved along to baby diapers as well.
Euraz, how do you manufacture this? Take me through the manufacturing process. Is everything kind of made in a factory by your teams? How does it all work?
Well, we source raw materials globally, and we've got machines. We've got four machines in South Africa, in Durban, and all the production takes place online in our factories in-house. So all our baby diapers are manufactured in our factory.
And when you say all the production takes place in-house, what's the scale of the operation? I understand that you are involved within the ShopRite group as one of the clients that you supply your products into, but where else are you guys positioned? Where else in the market do you guys supply?
Well, we supply the ShopRite group extensively in all their brands, ShopRite, Checkers, and YouSave, but we also supply all the other major retailers in South Africa as well as the informal trade. And with the help of ShopRite, we've also been exposed to Africa, and we are creating a footprint there slowly but surely. And that is our target. Our target is to be a family business to supply hygienic care products to families throughout the continent.
Yoraz, what's it like running a family business as a family? What's it like taking over from your father, managing the business and keeping the business in the family? I imagine there's times where you don't always agree, but what's it like building such a business together?
I think that's one of the greatest joys, Jimmy, is to work with my brother and my sister. Now, under the guidance of my father, who has handed over the reins to us, we've managed to grow this business together, and it takes the highs and lows together. And the challenges are all positives. We've learned to work with each other, and this legacy we hope to take with us into the next generation, into the third generation of our business.
What does that third generation look like? What are the plans? I imagine diapers is not where you're going to limit yourselves now that you've got your manufacturing plants and facilities. You cater to such a variety of products. What's next for the business?
Well, obviously, we've just embarked in a massive expansion now and put one of the latest lines in the world globally, which allows us to be very competitive with quality, value. And from here onwards, we're hoping that this will take us to the next journey where we can localize all our production and increase our basket in all family consumer care, for incontinence for adults, wet wipes, a number of products. The list is endless.
What are some of the products that you are finding there's a potentially high demand for that you might not be able to meet at this stage, or that you've just gone into and you're seeing that, hang on, people are actually interested in this?
Well, I mean, new products like FemCare, lady sanitary pads, is a big demand in Africa, and it's going to continue to grow. So it's something we definitely are on our radar. But I think the matter at hand is to focus on what we our expansion at the moment, and focus on this new line and settle ourselves in. We're a family business, so we take one step at a time. We don't try and run up the mountain. We try and walk up the mountain.
Yoraz, let's get into the most important part of our SME feature is, how do people get hold of your products? Where can people purchase your products, access you if they want to reach out, if there's potentially partners out there that say, we want to support the work that you do, we want to invest in the business. How do people get hold of you?
Well, we're available online. You can get us on our website at cleopatraproducts.co.za. You can email us. There's many ways of getting hold of us. But, I mean, our products, I mean, we've just launched a new product with ShopRite called Lovey's Ultra. And this is a new premium cutting-edge technology product, will allow all walks of life to have access to a premium diaper. So, yeah, I think ShopRite Group and all the leading retailers will have a number of our other products which will be available to them.
And the price point on your products? Are they consumer-friendly prices?
Yes, we've always been consumer-friendly. We've always taken the consumer into account. We want to make a premium baby diaper available to all consumers in South Africa. So that is a very important point.
Such an interesting business and such an interesting take on the essential products that we often forget about. Be sure to visit them. Be sure to support the business. Thanks so much, Yoraz, for the time and for the insights. We wish your business all the success and all the best of luck. That's Yoraz Osman, who is a director at Cleopatra Tissue Products, joining me for this week's SME. They do a lot of hygiene products, and I'd encourage you to go check them out.
The Property Pod.
Impact entrepreneur in property, Jonathan Liebman, the brainchild behind the Maboneng precinct in the Joburg CBD, has ventured into the tourism sector and hotels specifically. Liebman is now one of the driving forces behind Black Brick Apart Hotels as a co-founder. On the Property Pod this week, he shares insight on the new venture, which has emerged as Africa's fastest growing apartment hotel network.
The Property Pod.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
And we've come to the end of the show, folks. Thanks for tuning in. If you've missed any of the conversations, you know exactly where you can catch up on them. They're available online everywhere on the MoneyWeb app, on the MoneyWeb platforms. They're available online. So you can really go and catch up on all the conversations. It's gone 7 o'clock now. Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.